Paper 3, Section 2. Hold single column, page 46. Let's see. Don't think we need any real preface. Just remember that section, that first section we did last week was on omnipresence. So don't lose sight of that. Make sure that that's in your mind. It's the revelators are demanding, a lot of us as readers of the Revelation. They don't want you know, if they did omnipresence first, they expect you to remember that you now have omnipresence in your mind, and you're going to need that so you don't misinterpret, what they say next. Don't take it out of context. That's the context, or even, the pretext, you could say, for what we're going to read. So from omnipresence in general, now what about power?
What didn't it say that on the human consciousness level, that the first characteristic or quality attribute of God that humans figured out was omnipotent, all powerful?
And you kind of see that they actually invoke that too. Is that right? Yeah, I mean it's. I mean the fact that I hardly have to move and I slam into something material. Means it's just inexorably going to be, front and center in our awareness, and we're going to try to figure out where that comes from. And as we begin to have the notion of God, that's the first thing that we're sort of going to put in His lap is He must be behind the solidity, the pain of your stub toe, or the solidity of the mountain, that's before you, or whatever, or the majesty of the sky over your head, or right. Yeah.
God's infinite power. All the universes know that the Lord God omnipotent reigns. The affairs of this world and other worlds are divinely supervised. He does according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. It is eternally true. There is no power but of God. Within the bounds of that which is consistent with the divine nature, it is literally true that with God, all things are possible. The long drawn out evolutionary process of peoples, planets, and universes are under the perfect control of the universe creators and administrators and unfold in accordance with the eternal purpose of the Eternal Father. Proceeding in harmony and order and in keeping with the all-wise plan of God, there is only one lawgiver. He upholds the worlds in space and swings the universes around the endless circles of the eternal circuit.
Okay. One thing, notice they brought right into the beginning of that second one, within the bounds of that which is consistent with the divine nature. Remember how when we were talking about omnipresence, you said, that's right, omnipresence, like up in paper 118. When they talk about omnipresence, and they have that section, omnipresence and ubiquity, and they were contrasting the two. And they go, and then you go forward a little bit, and there's that section, omnipotence and compossibility, that which is, it conforms with possibility. So see, they're invoking that, right away here too. So it doesn't matter who the author is, that's one of the things they're putting right up front. So, before they say anything, they remind you of, he can't do the non-doable. He can't make square circles, all those sorts of things like we talked about. Okay, so they have that. And then notice the other little thing here. I mean, you get the first hint in the first paragraph where they say divinely supervised. And then you get down in here, and this long drawn out evolutionary process they're talking about, or processes, but then it says proceeding in harmony and order. Not proceeding toward harmony, proceeding in harmony. It is in harmony right now. It was, you know, a million years ago, etc. It's always in harmony. And you know, remind yourself of that that passage from, or that sentence really, from the Jesus Papers. What is that? I guess I could tell you just for your reference. Let's see. What is the ordination paper? That's paper. Is it one? I think it might be. Let's see. Yeah, that's 140 in section 8. When they're talking about doing the Father's will, there's that line that I often, you know, sort of paraphrase. And we just read it definitively. He, Jesus, sought to make it clear that the world is not to be regarded as an enemy, that the circumstances of life constitute a divine dispensation, working along with the children of God. And I often just invoke that, and now is a divine dispensation. And that is a very good place to start, and hence why Jesus sought to make that clear. That's a very good place to start if you want to really challenge the history of mankind's thinking about God and the circumstances of life. You know, you look around you and there's, you know, especially think in primitive times, you know, there's just nothing but death and destruction all around you all the time, disease and war and famine and whatnot. It just, you know, it's not the first thing that's going to pop into your head, you know, that now is a divine dispensation. But you must recognize that. It's like, we were talking about, you know, first we had the nature of God that you need to recognize. And then there's the attributes of God that you can deduce once you've recognized the nature. Same thing with it. You must recognize that now is a divine dispensation. You're not going to deduce it from your circumscribed point of view. You have to know that with absolute certitude. And if you know that, if you know that now is a divine dispensation, no matter where you go within the finite, there is the presence of harmony. You're in harmony. No matter where you go or when you do it, you're in harmony. You're in the presence of harmony. You're in, because you're in the presence of whom? Who is?
Mother.
Yeah. See, to recognize that is to recognize that there's more than the God of transcendence that's outside and occasionally pokes his finger in. There's something that's always there, and it's God, it's divine. You know, there is a universal harmony, there is a cosmos. You have to, you know, recognize that there's a cosmos. There's a universal harmony, and you've been given by the individuality of that harmony, you know, the mother, you've been given a means of connecting to that harmony. The three cosmic intuitions.
I can't say exactly that I completely understand what a divine dispensation is.
Mm-hmm. It means, well, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, they're just invoking that. They're going to really challenge you to, you know, as we go forward. But just, you know, just let me put a little bit forward. I mean, do you have the subtlety yet of insight to see the harmony that's beneath the surface. You know, if times are going great, it's easy for humans to go, you know, I think there's a God and everything is must be wonderful. But as the bombs are dropping, how many humans go, you know, now is a divine dispensation? You know, how many people, you know, will think, you know, that we're quivering on the very brink, you know, if 5 years from now we're in the midst of a world war? Will you still think that we're quivering on the very brink? We will be. We'll be even more quivering because it'll be 5 years from now. Can you recognize, you know, the presence of God? Remember talking about omnipresence. Can you recognize the presence of God in spite of all appearances to the contrary? Or are you wholly subjective? Will you only acknowledge God if you see, you know, a glittering light before your eyes? Okay. You know, what they're trying to do is first get us to establish the this recognition of God's infinite power and what that means. Then you can focus on specific issues. Well, it's like, well, if he has infinite power, how come he doesn't, why isn't everyone saved? You know, or questions like that.
I mean, isn't that a quote from Jesus?
I mean, yeah, I mean, the whole bit about with God all things are possible. Yeah. But, you know, notice what they did here. You know, what has been missing for 2,000 years? In the, you know, people, you know, that's, you know, a very oft repeated phrase. You know, with God all things are possible. It's repeated, you know, like magic words, a mantra practically. And that's just the point. It's treated like magic words. You know, it isn't literally, you know, the case that all things are possible. The impossible is not possible. See, but lots of believers in God think that the impossible is possible with God. No, that's illogical. If that was possible, then there wouldn't be a God. You know, to turn it around and ground God in a causal reality, the only reason I'm stressing that is you're gonna really see that as we go forward. Like Jim was pointing out, I mean the power thing is one of the first things that sort of is recognized, and because it's such a fundamental recognition, and because when you actually start, you know, carefully looking at the power part of reality, it does not seem like you're in Havona. I mean, you know, it doesn't help any better when you start getting telescopes and you look out and you're like, whoa, that star just blew up. You know, how is a supernova like light and life? There's this stark contrast between what you immediately experience in the domain of physical energy. Can you bring that into conformity with what you must recognize, that now is a divine dispensation, because not everything is in the hand of God.
Yeah. As such, you Ranch Book readers don't view death like many of the other people. And when people die or their loved ones die, you know, they're thinking how tragic that is. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it's really not tragic for us. And I think that's the underlying that you're talking about, is that death to the cosmos isn't a tragedy in that sense.
But of course, the challenge is obvious there. It's easy for us in the calm of this room to think about this theoretically. You know, the challenge is, what if you're in the foxhole and the bombs are dropping around you? Can you hold on to that? That absolute certitude. I know that no real harm can befall me. It's important to just constantly be trying to build up that strength within, because a testing time may come upon you. You know, and then we'll see, you know, if it was wishful thinking or something that you've realityized within you. It's important to, you know, to notice that there they are stressing that again. You know, it's not just supervised, it's divinely supervised. It's not, you know, moving towards harmony, it is in harmony. So how can that be?
Of all the divine attributes, his omnipotence, especially as it prevails in the material universe, is the best understood. Viewed as an unspiritual phenomenon, God is energy. This declaration of physical fact is predicated on the incomprehensible truth that the first source and center is the primal cause of the universal physical phenomena of all space. From this divine activity, all physical energy and other material manifestations are derived. Light, that is, light without heat, is another of the non-spiritual manifestation of the deities. And there is still another form of non-spiritual energy, which is virtually unknown on Urantia. It is as yet unrecognized.
Okay, so first of all, I just want you to notice how precise. Notice at the end there, they're saying non-spiritual. But at the beginning of the paragraph, they said unspiritual. Why? Are they synonyms? Well, yes and no. It would be untrue to say in any way that God is non-spiritual, you know, that he's literally not spiritual. I mean, he's God, personalized deity, you know, I mean, God is spirit. But they want you to focus on God as energy rather than God as spirit. So they're saying, okay, take the totality of God and pull back from the spiritual part. Undo, you know, your focus on that. In an unspiritual point of view, where you defocus that, what you see is God as energy. Okay, they're using the language that precisely. God is energy. And remember how we talked last time about how they invoked that little passage from the Psalms about the sun going in its course across the sky, you know, and what it actually says in Psalms is, you know, it bathes everything in heat, you know, but they changed it to light. Yeah. Okay. So now, have that in mind as you're reading this. You're going, okay, yeah, we just talked about omnipresence. And they actually invoked the word light. And you think, well, yeah, when we're talking about the physical universe here, one of the first things I think of is how the whole universe is bathed in light. Light with heat. Right, that was actually, you know, it was the heat part that was in Psalms. You know, they changed it to light, but, you know, the kind of light that's coming from these bulbs and everything, that's light with heat. I mean, it's heating up this room. It's not as cold in this room as it was before we turned, you know, I turned on the lights a while back. You know, that's light with heat. Okay? And it bathes the cosmos. And so in this context of thinking about this presence of God, you know, bathing the cosmos physically, God is energy, that might be one of the first things you think of. Literal, that kind of light, photon-like light, bathing the universe. So it's in that subtext. They say that they're basically saying, and there's a couple more things that also bathe the cosmos, very much like the light that you're familiar with bathes the cosmos, and it's enhances is a very direct electronic level energy manifestation of this omnipresence of God is energy. You know, something that just sort of bathes everything and is interacting with everything from every direction. That kind of an influence. Not something that's more like particulate, but something that's a little bit more, you know, omnipresent like. You know, God's everywhereness, you know, is the title of the previous section. And when you begin to unravel the foundations of in the nature of physical matter and physical energy. I mean, yes, there's a whole sub-electronic level domain, but they're not really, they're staying sort of at our level here. They're not trying to really get into deep physics here. I mean, they're just using Psalms and, you know, they're quoting from Revelation and Daniel and whatnot, okay? They're not trying to get too deep here, but they are giving you this interesting little, you know, they're saying, even at the level of what you're thinking of when you think of light, there's two other things that are very much like that. One of which you have really no notion of, light without heat. In other words, see, a photon is that collection of 100 ultimatons, but it's in an oscillation, you know, what we would currently call an electromagnetic-like oscillation. And it's that oscillation that when it engages, it was absorbed by things, deposits energy into that object and heats it up. Okay? If you take away that oscillation, so that it's just the collection of 100 ultimatons with nothing imposed upon it, that's light without heat. That's the foundation of the electronic level. Okay? And then there's so that's the first thing they're invoking, and you notice they don't say anything like, you know, virtually unknown or anything like that. The other one, there are many things. Once you begin to recognize how this works, there's a number of things that have been observed, you know, even way back when this was written, that point to this other bathing energy. And if we hadn't thrown out our desire to understand things causally, and we go, well, okay, now that looks like there's something causing that. I wonder what that would, you know, if we were still trying to pursue the causality of physical phenomena, you know, we would have, you know, been moving towards a recognition. As it is, it's still unrecognized what they're talking about here. But see, it's virtually unknown. See, it's effectively unknown. But I mean, the evidence is right in front of you. It could be known if you just open your eyes. That's what they're getting at. And that's I don't want to get too deep into that. But that's another sort of, you start with that base of the electronic level, that collection of 100 ultimatons, and you can there's a very slight addition that you can add to it. That makes it a particle that is very easily absorbed by matter. And the universe is bathed in it, and everything is absorbing, everything's in equilibrium with it, as a matter of fact. But that's not recognized. You know, right now, when they look at phenomena, they think of it as just somehow being innate. You know, they look at what it is, and it's like, well, somehow it has that property because of just what it is. It can't be because it's in some sort of an equilibrium with an environment, because they think it's in a vacuum. You know, so that, and the funny thing about this is, you know, you go forward and you get into the late 40s where it was first theorized, and then into the early 60s when it was first demonstrated. This particle has been discovered, but it's still unrecognized, because the first thing that was discovered is called an electron neutrino. This thing they're talking about is a thing that's currently called a muon neutrino. But they're very different. But they just assume that because it's a neutrino, it's a little neutral thing like that first one, and the electron neutrino is something that basically doesn't interact very much at all. They assume that the muon neutrino is exactly the same way. Well, it's not. It's almost the opposite. But they can't. No one recognizes that, because the assumption doesn't allow that recognition. You assume it doesn't interact, and you rationalize everything that you observe with that assumption, and you can rationalize anything. You have to recognize that it's, you know, that it's interacting, and then, oh, and that explains why this, you know. So that, I don't want to go any more physics, but that's what's going on. That's what they're talking about. They're talking about, of all the things that are sort of right there at the foundation of the electronic level of physical you know, energy, things like photons, you've got these two very special bathing sort of, you know, light-like phenomena. You know, and no others. It's just those two, and that's the two they're talking about here. Okay.
They're ready to bestow recognition upon the Higgs
particle. Right, and see, that whole thing, you know, God particle, Higgs boson. See, that's as far removed from this as you can get. I mean, this is the actual foundation of, you know, where mass and things come from, and they're looking as far away from that as they can look. This is, you know, this is at what they, you know, currently call zero energy. I mean, it's why they're not really definitively known. They basically have zero energy, okay? And they're looking at the biggest energy number they can manage to produce, you know, trying to find the magic source of of reality. You know, they're actually looking as far away as you possibly could look from the actuality. You know, you don't need gigantic super colliders. All you need to do is just take the simple things that we've known for a long, 100 years now, and just look at them and recognize what it's telling you. It's right in front of you. It has been for a long, long time. You know, it doesn't need to be discovered. It's already been discovered. It needs to be recognized. Discover, recognize, interpret, choose. Okay? We do lots of discovering. We skip the recognize step, and then we do lots of interpreting based upon our a priori assumptions, unquestioned assumptions, helpless victim of the a priori assumptions of science, philosophy, and religion. That's the mode we're in. Lots of interpreting of our discoveries, no recognition.
They're looking at a vector type motion. This thing affects the billiard ball type thing. Whereas what you're describing here is a complete scalar.
No. No, we're not going all the way down there.
Okay.
I mean, it's definitely particles, but but it's particles with very little of the kind of motion that we call energy. They're looking for particles with a whole lot of this thing we call energy. Yeah. They're looking in the wrong direction. Okay. Yep.
Thank you. What about the aura camera?
Again, when you're dealing with the things at the foundational level, like we talked about, mechanical mind is very similar to that electromagnetic phenomena that we see in physical matter. The two have a lot of similar things, and so you can pick up some of that mechanical mind, you know, influence with something that picks up electromagnetic phenomena. Because, I mean, you have to be able to do that because, you know, mechanical mind has to interface with matter. So anything that's measuring sort of matter directly is bound to pick up something that is directly interfacing with that matter. Otherwise, it's not directly interfacing with matter. So yeah, I mean, there are some observations, you know, Kirlian photography, those sorts of things, see, that you can pick up some hints of the mechanical mind. Okay, but it's very important, you know, in this context. I mean, you can go off on all kinds of tangents, and that's why I wanted to spend a little time on this. This is not the source of the energy problem or anything like that. This is not some fantastic thing. If we just discover it, you know, we can all, you know, stop, you know, drilling for oil or something. That's not what we're talking about here. You know, so, and it's also not some sort of mystical energy or anything like that. Okay, it's a very definitive thing, and it's just the foundation. You know, they're just invoking a couple of facts about the foundations of physics that currently aren't recognized. All right.
God controls all power. He has made a way for the lightning. He has ordained the circuits of all energy. He has decreed the time and manner of the manifestations of all forms of energy matter. And all these things are held forever in his everlasting grasp, in the gravitational control, centering on another paradise. The light and energy of the eternal God thus swing on forever around his majestic circuit. The endless but orderly procession of the starry hosts composing the universe of universes. All creation circles eternally around the paradise personality center of all things and beings. The omnipotence of the Father pertains to the everywhere dominance of the absolute level, whereon the three energies, material, mindal, and spiritual, are indistinguishable in close proximity to him, the source of all things. Creature mind, being neither paradise monota nor paradise spirit, is not directly responsive to the universal Father. God adjusts with the mind of imperfection, with your ancient mortals through the thought adjusters.
Okay, just a couple little details before we get to that last little bit. For those of you who don't remember, Minota is just another one of the names they use. The substance that the isle is made out of, absolutum. So it doesn't matter if you're talking about paradise matter or paradise spirit, what they're saying there. Notice this in this second paragraph, there's a key first step they're making at trying to get you to appreciate precisely what we mean by his omnipotence. The omnipotence of the Father pertains to the everywhere dominance of the absolute level. Okay? So when they say things like, he has decreed the time and manner of the manifestation of all forms of energy matter. Okay, if you just hear that, you're immediately thinking, wow, now that's micromanagement. So you got this infinite God. It's a good thing he's infinite, because he's got to have an infinite number of little tweezer fingers, that is micromanaging every little jot and tittle of energy, so that, he can decree the time and manner of the manifestation of all forms. See? No, not like that. Okay? He has an absolute grip on the absolute, level of energy matter. That means absolutely everything follows from that grip. Okay? So he's not micromanaging it down the chain. The whole lightning quote there, from Job, God's fingers are not running down, the path of that lightning bolt, making it do exactly, it's going to jiggle like this and it's going to jiggle. That's not what he's doing. Okay? He's engaged all of the physical reality from his domain, from the absolute level. And he has a firm grip on the absolute level. From there comes the absonite. It's firmly locked to the absolute. Hence, indirectly, the absonite is locked onto his grip. And from the absonite comes the finite. Et cetera. Follow back up the chain. So that's the first thing that's a big difference from what a lot of humans have thought forever, about God's omnipotence. They think of him as some incredible micromanager of every pebble, which is basically going into pantheism, the colossal error of pantheism. Right, if you go back to paper 118, see, he's remembering paper 118. He knows how they talk about it up there. Yeah, exactly. That's not what we're talking about. But just because God is not this infinite set of finite fingers that are micromanaging every point in the finite like that, it doesn't mean that the grip is any less absolute. Absolute is absolute. Just allow it to be real and not magical. Allow the absolute from the absolute level to have an absolute grip on everything, but not from within, from above. Or, depending on how you want to think about it, God's influence coming down from above, or, as the foundation, the bedrock for all of physical reality. That foundation is, the Isle of Paradise is the nucleus of every, that absolute grip is the foundation upon which all of physical reality is seated. Remember how they said in that second paragraph, he upholds the worlds in space and swings the universes around the endless circle of the eternal circuit. Just talking about matter there, the aisle is the direct material upholder. Everything is seated upon the aisle. But who's behind the aisle? The Father, as the universal controller. So that's, that's what they're invoking. Through the aisle, there's that upholding. So notice that really carefully. When they use, in terms of sort of the mind and spirit and personality, upholding within, say, the local universe, that's the Creative Mother Spirit. That's upholding the beings. But the Father, has that grip on the aisle. Okay, so so that's the the first thing they're bringing in, and now this interesting little bit, creature mind being neither paradise matter or paradise spirit, is not directly responsive to the universal Father. Okay, can you allow that? See, this is a, that's basically what the divine counselor is saying. Okay, I'm going to say this. Can you allow that to be a fact? Or are you going to go, well, I don't know. I thought you said that with God all things are possible. I don't think I can allow that. I don't believe in a God that couldn't engage directly my mind. Well, then you don't believe in the actual God. Or more to the point, you haven't recognized the actual God. It has nothing to do with belief. The point is to stop believing something about God and recognize the facts of God. God has limited himself in this way. The Father, that is. God the Spirit, okay, that's another thing. But God the Father cannot directly engage, grab a hold of your mind and puppet it. He cannot grab your mind energy and puppet it. Okay? So, when you think about thought adjusters and you think about thought changer, thought adjuster, thought controller, okay, for years, especially when you thought about thought controller, you thought, wow, the Father has an absolute grip on my mind and he's puppeting me, he's controlling me. No, he cannot do that. Okay, so what does that mean? What does it mean for that thought adjuster to have achieved a state of being a thought controller? They've italicized this word adjusts. The first thing is like, ooh, cool, like thought adjuster. But think about adjusts, not adjusts to, but adjusts with. Okay, so when that thought adjuster is first given to you, you're a long ways from fusion. So you can't think of the word adjust in a sort of the immediate, direct, literal sense of to join. In terms of like fusing, we're obviously not invoking something that definitive of a joining. We'll get to that in a second. But initially, the word adjust, especially if you say adjust with, parallel, adjust with it. Remember the prefix AD, that's toward, and it sort of means that you're approaching toward something. It's sort of the deepest sort of essence of that word. That you're just, striking step with it in some way. Come toward it and approach it. Okay? Approach what it's up to. Okay? And follow along with it. So that's how it starts. He's adjusting with that mind. He brings that adjuster into the mind, adjusting with it. Now, as you go along, more and more, you're choosing to consecrate your mind to synchronize with the harmony of the cosmos. Well, that experiential nature of that adjuster that's now in your mind, that's a point of harmony. It's like taking the universal harmony, condensing it into a little point and sticking it within your mind so that it's a much more immediate, tangible fact of harmony that you can engage and synchronize with. Harmony made thick and imminent, intimate. You are choosing to consecrate your mind to that harmony. The more, to get to the point of thought controller, the reason it's a thought controller is because you have chosen to consecrate your mind to the adjuster to that degree. It can't control you without your complete permission. You're in control, actually. The thought controller, in the sort of personal sense, is you, not the Father. You have so chosen to conform your mind to that point of harmony, both it is my will, you know, that your will be done, and here is my consecration of mind, so that this is not just a potential, but it actually is now in harmony. Okay, that's what they're invoking there, and obviously the more you do that, you can actually take it to the not so much approaching, but literally joining, you know, at fusion, when you've fully synchronized with that. So, see, God, again, God is, if the Father is the initiator, he potentializes things. He comes in as close as he can. He cannot directly engage. He doesn't have that ability. He comes in as close as he can, and becomes a still small voice saying, you know, recognize what has just fallen in stride one nanometer away from you and perfectly parallel to your path. Notice what's there. If you choose to fully identify with that, it's yours. You will fuse to it. But you have to choose, because I do not have the ability to fuse to you. I've given that to you. You have the ability to fuse to me, but not the other way around. You choose me, not I puppet you.
So, Chris, with the supplying favorable conditions,
mm-hmm.
That's with the thought adjuster. That's not necessarily with those around you.
The supplying favorable conditions is with anything you can think of. It's with the thought adjuster, the Spirit of Truth, the Holy Spirit. You know, your angels, those around you. But it starts within. Obviously, you need to start within. Supply the favorable conditions to achieve equality of character within, so that you have something to give to those without. It starts within. We've talked about this a lot. We need advancing civilization. Advancing civilization needs God-conscious citizens. You know, you have to choose to make that a fact within you first. You know, God-consciousness, you know, true monogamy, true religion, or true religion, true monogamy, prayer, and God-consciousness.
That's an essential lack of humility. That when people... assume that, you know, I got to follow my adjuster. What you guys are doing is fine.
Yeah, without you know, overstressing it.
That's a living relationship.
You can imagine that you're going to follow your adjuster all you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between your imagination and fact. You're not a creator. You have to supply the favorable conditions so that what you desire can come about. You need to be grown into that state where it's possible to follow the adjuster, to have that adjuster in not a, you know, literally an adjuster mode, but a thought controller mode. That's not going to happen just because you want it to. It's not just that. I mean, that's at least the start.
Right.
Now the potential's there. But it's so much important to see, to recognize that God can't do this, you know, what you're thinking. You're thinking, you know, a lot of these people are thinking that the Father can just reach in and grab your mind, and now you're going to follow. He can't grab your mind. That's what they just said.
Through your cooperation.
You have to grab the adjuster. And that, it's like, okay, I want to do that, so I'm just going to do that. Now I think I've done it. No, it doesn't work that way. So it's a very tricky thing. Yeah.
I think most people think that getting in touch with their thought adjuster means getting some clear direction out of what they should do with their life. Like, oh, wow, I got this inspiration. I think my thought adjuster wants me to be a gourmet chef. You know, it's not like that.
No, no, no. I mean, you'll be lucky if even, you know, your angels are going to get that specific, you know, but you know, but yeah, not your thought adjuster. Okay, hold on a second.
You're pointing out something really cool here, which is this whole kind of flip that thought adjuster thing, add to it who's really in control, the sacrosanct nature of personality, free will.
Yeah.
And then I think about Jesus, who was pretty spiritual by the time the water and the wine in the wedding came around, and he was the most surprised and had to say to himself, okay, that's cool. Now I've got to be even in more control of my thoughts, emotions, desires, so that, you know, if I want to turn water into wine, I can, but, you know, that was essentially a mistake.
And you've heard me say things like that. See, that's what you start to recognize, like, wow, the responsibility. You know, this first thought that you have as a little child, it's like, oh, I want all of that stuff. Give me all that stuff. It's like, no, you don't want all that stuff. You aren't ready for that. That requires, if you're going to be, you know, in direct charge of such power, you need to have some serious objectivity. And, you know, so notice how that feeds you. That, you know, when you start to talk about power, they have to at some point mention the adjuster, because we're reminded that that adjuster is just as much pure energy as it is pure spirit. The Father has given you a significant measure of what we're talking about here when we're talking about his omnipotence. You know, as a finaliter, you will be wielding the power of that adjuster. This, the power that right now is wielded directly and solely by the Father, will be put into your hands.
And it won't burn you.
It won't burn you, and you will not burn others with it.
John, I don't understand what your friend was implying, because this is the best 2 hours of my week. And it directs my entire week. So what's wrong? I mean, should we be out protesting?
Yeah.
What are we supposed to be doing with the 2 hours?
Occupy the adjuster. Leave that on the recording.
Let's go forward. Kind of hold that thought in your back of mind. We don't need to comment on that, but it'd be fun to just hold some of those thoughts as we go forward here.
The Universal Father is not a transient force, a shifting power, or a fluctuating energy. The power and wisdom of the Father are wholly adequate to cope with any and all universe exigencies. As the emergencies of human experience arise, he has foreseen them all, and therefore he does not react to the affairs of the universe in a detached way, but rather in accordance with the dictates of eternal wisdom and in consonance with the mandates of infinite judgment. Regardless of appearances, the power of God is not fluctuating, functioning in the universe as a blind force. Situations do arise in which it appears that emergency rulings have been made, that natural laws have been suspended, that misadaptations have been recognized, and that an effort is being made to rectify the situation, but such is not the case. Such concepts of God have their origin in the limited range of your viewpoint, in the finiteness of your comprehension, and in the circumscribed scope of your survey. Such misunderstandings of God, understanding of God, is due to the profound ignorance you enjoy regarding the existence of the higher laws of the realm, the magnitude of the Father's character, the infinity of his attributes, and the fact of his free willness.
Well, a little ignorance is bliss thing there, you know. Okay. So, you know, he's just getting started. Profound ignorance, et cetera. He's going to stress that some more, but let's just notice what he's said up to this point. So, you know, he's giving you this example, you know, and we talk about a lot. We talk about this as being an emergency revelation. Okay? And then they say, but such is not the case. Okay, so how do I resolve those two? I mean, this is an emergency revelation, but such is not the case for whom? Right. Who has a different viewpoint? Now, this fact that they brought up the word viewpoint, you know, this is one of the things we've been really bringing up for quite some time now. To remind yourself that you very much begin with a, you know, a finite viewpoint, obviously, you know, a bottom-up viewpoint, an individuality viewpoint, a time viewpoint. The Father doesn't have that, any of those viewpoints. Father has an eternity viewpoint, a unity viewpoint, a top-down viewpoint, okay? An infinite viewpoint. Okay? So, now put the two together. This is an emergency situation, but what does that mean? You know, this book is here because of an emergency situation. You know, in the plane in which this is bestowed, when you know, there's no other way to describe what's going on. Like they said, I mean, you watch what's going on. Situations do arise in which it appears that emergency rulings have been made, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, in that plane, you know, from that bottom-up perspective, you're going, okay, well, this is what's happening, right? I mean, what's within this plane is not adequate to deal with what's going on in this plane. So something from above that plane is having to come down and engage it and, you know, and deal with the exigencies, you know, the needs and urgencies resulting from that emergency. And that could happen in this plane too, and when someone above would come down into that plane. See, take it all the way up. I mean, it's just like what they said about the absolute level. Okay, God's engaging the material things. Okay. If you see that functioning going all the way up, instead of just looking at it at one level, you know, the level that the quote unquote emergency is happening in. You know, these things, these out of the normal events that go on in that plane are coming from above. I mean, it's all within the norm of the Father who's coming down. Okay? I mean, when, you know, Laniforge shows up or something, that isn't somehow, well, that was like totally, you know, out of sync with everything in reality. No, that's all within the potentials and the absolute overcontrol of the Father. I mean, he's behind that. Okay? It's all coming down from above. To see it as something that comes down, that's what they're trying to get at. When they say, but such is not the case. Okay? See it in its full vertical structure. That's, you know, if you take it all the way back to the source, that's the Father behind everything you see there. And he's not changing anything. He's just doing what the Father does. It. Oh, coincidentally, there's just what you need to deal with the exigencies of this emergency. Well, that's convenient. No, I mean, there's no, I mean, how are you going to escape the infinite grasp? Of course there's going to be what it's needed. You know, it's all him engaging the, engaging it from an infinite perspective.
It sounds like when you're reading part three, you keep coming across it suddenly.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's all built in. Now, remind you, now is a divine dispensation. See? that you know, that's a way you can begin to appreciate that. It's a divine dispensation. There's no way that anything is going to happen that somehow is not already under absolute control. I mean, where on earth would this thing be happening that is somehow outside of the sphere of the infinite? You know, there is no such place. So coincidentally, there's always going to be what's needed. You know, there's always going to be the reservist, you know, or whatever, or the most high observer, or the or the personalized adjuster, or whatever it is. Yeah, it's always going to be there.
Yeah. You know, you were talking earlier about not micromanaging, mm-hmm. and yet this is the connection, is that with that hierarchy you're talking about, you or the planet or the system or whatever is literally connected and touched by, and so faith and prayer and all of those things can and do, can manifest anything good, anything possible.
And it's not micromanagement. See, it's just downstepped omnipotence.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
A nice clarity
for me. Yeah. Well, there was something over here? Okay.
Some things we're not going to get very well able. I mean, we aren't going to listen to our thought adjuster, you know, per se, and we got to learn it the hard way. And you know, are they following what Jesus teaches, or from the heart?
I mean,
or
I think
is
they
it,
are. Yeah.
Right, or is
it's
it just
level.
Falling apart? You know, from the seams.
Yeah, and you'll see. You know, they're going to bring that up a little bit here. You know, we read a little bit more forward. Let's go ahead. I mean, because this beginning to directly challenge us, you'll see he's just going to turn the pressure up even more here.
Planetary creatures of God's spirit indwelling, scattered hither and yon throughout the universe of space, are so nearly infinite in number and order. Their intellects are so diverse, their minds are so limited, and sometimes so gross, their vision is so curtailed and localized that it is almost impossible to formulate generalizations of law adequately expressive of the Father's infinite attributes, and at the same time, to any degree, comprehensible to these created intelligences. Therefore, to you, the creature, many of the acts of the all-powerful Creator seem to be arbitrary, detached, and not infrequently heartless and cruel. But again, I assure you that this is not true. God's doings are all purposeful, intelligent, wise, kind, and eternally considerate of the best good, not always of an individual being, an individual race, an individual planet, or even an individual universe, but they are for the welfare and best good of all concerned, from the lowest to the highest. In the epochs of time, the welfare of the part may sometimes appear to differ from the welfare of the whole. In the circle of eternity, such apparent differences are non-existent.
Okay, so now, you know, there's that last part. I suspect a number of you were reminded of that sentence I so often invoke. Let me just read that from up there in the Jesus Papers. The rule of the Most Highs, the over-controllers of political evolution, is a rule designed to foster the greatest good to the greatest number of all men and for the greatest length of time. You know, saying the same thing, those Most Highs, those Verondadex, those very, very father-like expressions of local universe sonship, you know, they are very much the direct hands of what they're reminding us here. It may go very poorly for the individual for a short period of time. Many people may die. Okay. Now go back and just, you know, notice carefully that sentence that starts at therefore. Therefore, to you, the creature, many of the acts of the all-powerful Creator. Okay, not many of the apparent acts, many of the actual acts of the God, of the all-powerful Creator, seem to be arbitrary, detached, and so infrequently heartless and cruel.
And not infrequently
heartless and cruel. Okay, so now step back and think about what that says about human notions of God. If a human has a notion of God where that God, you know, either never does or can't do anything that would ever even remotely appear to be arbitrary or detached, and or, you know, and certainly not frequently heartless and cruel, is that notion of God true? No. That's a false notion of God. That's a false notion of God. See, here's the, so just, you know, I want to stress that. I mean, make sure that sinks in. See, what they're saying between the lines there. The challenge that he's putting forward. You're not seeing the actual God until many of his acts appear to be heartless and cruel. Then you're actually beginning to see the actual God. Not because, of course, he's heartless and cruel, but it's impossible for them to not appear to be heartless and cruel from our circumscribed viewpoint. But they are the acts of God. If you do not see that, you have an imaginary God. You don't have the actual God. The challenge is to face that fact that the actual God is doing things that will appear to you to be heartless and cruel. That's a fact. Now, can you challenge yourself to have a more objective perspective that at least can resolve that to some degree? You know, as opposed to the way many resolve that by either rejecting the notion of God totally, or just closing their eyes and imagining God, and you know, and that's much easier. You know, an imaginary God can never do anything heartless and cruel. But the actual God will do things that do appear that way. Okay, let's bring it.
Well, you know, I can get my mind around this happening to an individual like myself.
Yeah.
Or even a race, where it seems to be an individual planet, that's not so easy. But think of a whole universe feeling.
A whole local universe.
Got short shrift.
Feeling like it got, yeah. That's not fair. Yeah. Right. But this is a big challenge. You know, it's like you said. I mean, the fact that the omnipotence thing is one of the very first things that humans, can deduce. You know, when they start to get a notion of God in their head, one of the very first things that they deduce is God must be omnipotent. That must be one of his attributes. He must be all powerful. And the moment that you allow that deduction to enter your consciousness, a whole bunch of confusion ensues. All this stuff that we know about, that's what they're invoking. And they're trying to get us to not turn away from that conflict. You need to rise up to a higher level of recognition. Do something which humans have not done in the past, and not turn away from this, either completely turn away from God in the face of this conflict of understanding, or just start, saying, well, yeah, I don't want to believe in a God like that. I'm going to believe in my own God, and my God, is warm and fuzzy, and he would never have most highs or anything like that. But the first thing they want here is, and notice he's not mincing any words. He's trying, you have to recognize that your mind You know, my mind, your mind, all of our minds in this room are so limited and sometimes so gross. Okay, that is unrefined. You know, coarse. I mean, incapable of recognizing the fine details. You know, yeah. You know, sledgehammer, you get. Boom, okay, yeah, I get that. But anything, you know, a tack hammer, no, you're clueless. You have no idea you even got hit with a tack hammer. Okay? That's how gross our consciousness is. So we have to challenge ourselves to have a more refined consciousness. And it's, you know, he's trying to remind you this is not going to be easy. You're starting severely handicapped in the ability to resolve the omnipotence of God with your experience, your material experiences.
That's the a priori assumption you've got to make about God. All of the nature of God we read about in the last chapter.
Right.
Good, truth, beauty, goodness, love, mercy. Those are all the foundation. And don't get, you know, don't just jump over to the power thing and say, you know, it's too much. You got this really nice guy who's taking care of everything. And it's okay. So you got a foundation there, mm-hmm. and then the omnipotence isn't so overwhelming.
I mean, definitely. Yeah, I mean, a firm grip on love, truth, beauty, and goodness is a good place to start. And you'll see that comes up here shortly too. And just one of those, you know, when they say detached, you know, that's one of the ways that humans have theologically resolved this issue. You know, deism. You know, the watchmaker God, you know, he winds up the universe, you know, and then just detaches himself from it, you know, and it just goes, you know, and sometimes bad things happen, whatever. But, you know, God is detached. You know, no, he is omnipresent. He's not detached. You have to resolve the fact that he's omnipresent and all of this stuff happens. Stuff that is insanely heartless and cruel. Insanely heartless and cruel, okay? And yet he's omnipresent. That's the conundrum that has to be resolved.
We are all part of the family of God, and we must therefore sometimes share in the family discipline. Many of the acts of God which so disturb and confuse us are the result of the decisions and final rulings of all wisdom, empowering the conjoined actor to execute the choosing of the infallible will of the infinite mind, to enforce the decisions of the personality of perfection, whose survey, vision, and solicitude embrace the highest and eternal welfare of all his vast and far-flung creation.
You know, like you could say care, for instance, in the place of solicitude. Okay, now, that's a thought that humans have played with a lot there. I mean, you know, Jesus, with the whole kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven, you know, put the family of God notion to play a lot. Okay, but when they say, and we must therefore sometimes share in the family discipline, when theologians have said that, okay, think about the mistake that they've made relative to what we've just been reading. They think God is down in time, he's a little micromanager guy, and he's got a little paddle and he's going to spank you. Okay, you know, there is no such thing happening. Okay, he's not down in time disciplining anyone. Okay, what is the discipline that they're talking about? How does that work? How can there be discipline and yet he doesn't come down in time and do all this micromanagement stuff? How can you resolve the two? You have, this discipline is in time. Okay, you have this time phenomenon, it's going along and plonk, you know, it slams into this wall. It's like, whoa, I feel like I've been disciplined. What is it you bumped up against in this flow of time? You bumped up against the forms of eternity. The Father has set up forms in eternity. And everything's fine down in time, you're chugging along, but if you bump up against the forms of eternity, it'll hurt. He didn't reach down and smack you. Those forms were there before time began. Those are the forms of eternity. They just are. They reach down from eternity into time. There's a way. And if you go off the way, you hit your head on the wall. Those are forms of eternity, not slaps in time.
Ancient people used to believe that wealth was bestowed upon people on whom God smiled.
Mm-hmm.
What you're just saying would kind of go along with that. If everything is going along great in your life and you're not hitting against these walls, you must be conforming to these.
What's the logical mistake that's being made there? It's there's an assumption of if and only if. I mean, if you're following the Father's way, yeah, you will experience harmony. But just because, you know, you happen to experience harmony doesn't mean you're following the Father's way. It's not an if and only if. It's like with the psychic circles, with the cosmic levels. If you move up the cosmic levels, if you move inward in the psychic circles, you will manifest material success. But just because you're materially successful doesn't mean that you're moving up the psychic circles.
It's not a measure.
It's not an if and only if. Okay? I mean, you know, if you have a more cosmic character, you have figured out how to take unity and weave it into individuality. You've figured out how to take that individuality, that, you know, for us now, a material domain, and you've figured out how to engage it with spirit, with unity, to bring that into play in your day-to-day life. You're cosmically successful. You know, you've brought them together. Well, I mean, if you bring unity into material phenomenon, that material phenomenon will have integrity and will have success. I mean, the cosmic progress implies material success. But material success does not imply cosmic progress. You could just coincidentally be material successful for a stretch. Okay. So that's the mistake that humans have always made. They've assumed that there's an equal sign between them. No, there's a one-directional arrow, not a two-directional arrow. Okay? Now, and they invoke that logic all the time. I mean, God is love, but love is not God. Love is God-like, but it's not God. Yeah. So they're trying to get you to use your first cosmic intuition. You know, humans have failed miserably at this throughout all time, and it all starts with this upfront omnipotence thing and all of the conundrums that immediately result. And because humans it's sad to record that they're so illogical, they have all of these illogical notions that have built up, where they've made these false assumptions because it's obvious, you know, if you have any vision of Havona, it's like, I bet if I go to Havona, it'll be a land flowing with milk and honey. Therefore, all lands that are flowing with milk and honey are Havona. No. it may just be like that until, you know, the earthquake. And then it won't seem so milk and honey anymore. Okay. It may be just a fleeting thing. You know, for this brief little stint, it's a salubrious climate, and then the ice age comes, or whatever.
Haley doesn't get her gym.
Or Krakatoa blows up, or whatever, and your idyllic tropical, you know, place is obliterated. Did you have something, Mike?
And then there's also the phenomenon of people worshiping money more or less, or using unethical means to pursue money and making that the highest priority in their lives. And so that's probably why when Jesus talked about, you know, a rich man, they didn't, or, you know, when he turns the table at the temple, they say, like, you know, wicked men shouldn't be allowed to use economic means or other means to entrench themselves for power and things like that. And so
Remember, did
just
he?
Because someone is better at making money because of cosmic growth doesn't mean that most rich people in the world today are particularly ethical or loving people.
Okay, two things there. You know, I try to always stress. First of all, did Jesus turn over the tables?
By himself.
Did Jesus turn over the tables in the temple? Right. Okay. You got to, you know, make sure you don't, you know, think of the Bible story. Think of the actual story. And then number two, when someone says material success, everyone immediately thinks money. False. It's not what we're talking about. It might be what you're talking about. It's not for force what you're talking about. Material success could be, are you actually able to have a long-term friend? Or does everyone you know hate you? Okay, you're not materially successful then. Okay, that's not about spirit. Okay, do you have a lasting relationship with someone? That's material success. You have figured out how to bring unity into the midst of individuality. Unless you're talking about your identical twin here, that other person that you're friends with, have a lasting friendship with, is different than you. You have figured out how to bring unity into the midst of that individuality. You're materially successful. Okay? If your life is a bomb site in this regard, okay, there's some cosmic issues. You haven't figured out how to bring matter and spirit together, unity and individuality together.
It's perfect, like Ted Turner. I saw him the other night on TV, and he's got all this money, but he can't have a relationship. It's hard to be with him. And
the material success is an illusion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, that's a superior indicator.
Chris, but don't take that as a negative, because a lot of us need to go through the learning of being persecuted. God allows suffering.
Right. Again, don't think of anything in dichotomies, in static dichotomies.
Right.
The whole point is that we're supposed to be growing. The only problem that you can, you know, that you can impose upon yourself is to think that you don't need to grow. You know, and you could do that in a lot of ways. You could say, well, I don't need to be materially successful. I can just be spiritual. Or, I already am, completely successful in every way. There's nothing, I'm not lacking in anything. Or any sort of variation on that, is you're moving aggressively towards self-righteousness. The notion that you're innately divine in some rationalization scheme. And just one more little thing there. The other thing that you can do where you can self-limit is, if you try to engage others, you're not going to be perfect, in the first time you try it, but you need to be perfecting. It needs to be getting better. You can't say, well, no, this is just the way it is. I'm just, not going to have much luck with this. I'm going to constantly have difficulties with this because that's just how God made me. No. Okay. Right, you need to be moving. Okay. Don't shortchange yourself. Don't say, I just can't do that. I tried and tried and I failed 5 times, so it's obvious I can't do that. No, you can. You just need to, you've got some false initial assumption or something in play. You need to try it differently. You need to have material success because you want to be moving from 7th circular to 6th circular. You want to be growing. Find a way to be materially successful, to have a pleasant social interaction. Don't just say, well, God just made me an unpleasant social interactor. Okay? And people are just going to have to deal with it. All right, let's get to the earthquake.
Thus it is that your detached, sectional, finite, gross and highly materialistic viewpoint, and the limitations inherent in the nature of your being constitutes such a handicap that you are unable to see, comprehend, or know the wisdom and kindness of many of the divine acts which to you seem fraught with such crushing cruelty and which seem to be characterized by such utter indifference to the comfort and welfare, to the planetary happiness and personal prosperity of your fellow creatures. It is because of the limits of human vision, it is because of your circumscribed understanding and finite comprehension that you misunderstand the motives and pervert the purposes of God. But many things occur on the evolutionary worlds which are not the personal doings of the Universal Father.
Okay, so everything except that last sentence is just kind of a one solid theme. The pond scum theme. Okay? if that wasn't obvious, okay? You know, we have to all be very humble here. He's saying in just an endless drumbeat of words there. God, and his acts are just going to be inscrutable to you. That's just the way it is. You have to have faith. You need to grow that faith into trust, and that has to lead to a life of assurance. That in the midst of all that, in the midst of your inability to discern the divinity of what's going on around you, it is nonetheless divine, and you are secure. But that last little thing that they say, and pervert the purposes of God. Remember we talked about the word pervert, the versus there, the root, just completely turning it all the way around. We all know that this, like you mentioned, a lot of, leads many people to, atheism and thoughts like that. Just because, it's impossible for you to see the divinity in many ways. Don't turn that all the way around. Now, I can't see the divinity, therefore there is no divinity. That's mind projection fallacy. I can't see a solution, therefore there is no solution. Okay? I can't see God, therefore there is no God. No. You are detached, sectional, finite, gross, highly materialistic, okay, just, read that paragraph several times, okay? That's why. It's not God, it's you. That's why you're given faith to get, by the initiator, to initiate a temporal resolution to this problem, okay? And it's not the opiate of the masses. You're not just going to pretend that you're not seeing things that have utter indifference to the comfort and welfare, planetary happiness, personal prosperity, etc. That it's there. Those are facts. So you're not going to just close your eyes. But you're going to humbly recognize how they just describe you here as one with very limited nature. But you've been given a touch. You've been touched by the Father in this initiating way that you can have faith and you can grow that faith. Because you're also touched by the mother. Okay, grow that faith into trust. Grow that spiritual faith into a soul trust. That stands on us, so you can stand on your own. You're objective. You're not subject. Your recognition of yourself and your relationship with God is objective. It's within. It's not subject to what goes on outside. Because it's incapable for you to see an outside that's going to scream God. Okay? So you have to develop that within. But then don't, you know, make it really perverted, like that last sentence. You know, if you got the micromanager God in your head, then the earthquake happens, the tsunami happens, and you put an unnecessary conundrum in front of yourself. Okay, those were not the personal doings of the Universal Father. There was no personality in engaging the water and making a tsunami, or the earth engaging the water, making it a tsunami. Okay, God didn't personally do that.
Even when the garden was flooded with the degenerates in it?
Definitely not the garden. The planetary headquarters, that the master physical controllers wiped that off the map. That was purposeful. But again, that wasn't God. That was the master physical controllers. But working as God the sevenfold, you know, and the Father at the top of that, sure. Okay. But, you know, it doesn't say that that no things, you know, are the personal doings. It just says, but many things occur which are not. And it's like, well, how come they don't give me a list? Okay, I want you to tell me every single one that is and it isn't, and that'll help me a lot to believe in God more. Well, it doesn't work that way. They're not going to give you a list. They're not going to say that, you know, that when the water washed up here, it was, and when it washed up here, it wasn't. We're not going to know that. But they're just trying to remind you, you know, be very, very careful about sticking the personal acts of God into situations. I mean, part of this is just God, you know, from that absolute level, is controlling all this. And that absolute control, when it feeds down into the finite, has all kinds of gradual changes that manifest from that absolute control. And occasionally, there's sudden changes when it gets down to the finite. Boom, supernova, you know, a sudden change. He didn't reach in and personally choose to blow up that star. That's just something that's happening as you downstep the control of the absolute level down to the finite, that it has sharp transitions sometimes. That's just the way it is.
Where is it in the book that it says that sometimes the greatest affliction is not to have been a failure?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, you know, and of course, that's, you know, that's kind of getting into, you know, what Jim was bringing up, and they're about to bring up too. You obviously have to have the rest of the nature of God in your mind if you're going to start thinking about these very difficult material things. And that's an expression that one of the reasons why difficult things happen is because you need to have something to respond to. You know, we're just about to read the inevitabilities. They're coming up pretty quick here now, you know, where they really focus in on that. I mean, you've been given mind and spirit. Those have to have something to be applied to. Mind has adaptability. Well, what if there's, you know, everything is completely static in perfection? Well, what am I going to adapt to? I mean, I don't need mind then. He could have just made me a chemical, you know, construct, you know, a mechanical phenomenon. But he gave me mind. He gave me adaptability. So I shouldn't be too surprised if occasionally I have to actually adapt to something, that things change, maybe suddenly, maybe dramatically. It's like, whoa, that's going to require some serious adaptability. I'm going to have to really engage a lot more mind. Yeah, you might even grow. You might even supply favorable conditions for growth if you actually grab a hold of more mind. You know, how is the mother going to grow you if the external environment only requires you to ever grab this little much of mind and spirit? That's not favorable conditions for growth. The first thing you've got to do is have something that goes, okay, that's way inadequate. I need to grab a hold of something bigger. Yeah, favorable conditions.
I just wonder, it seems like like it's very common to for people to always like say that, oh, that was an act of God, or thank God we, or you know, that someone survived and had cancer, and like, oh, that must have been God, it helped me, or God showed me this way.
Mm.
But then it's like, I guess it's more fun to have it like really personal, or think that, that God does things to you personally, but is it like, does that ever happen, or is it like a thought adjuster that shows?
Sometimes a personalized adjuster intervenes, you know, and from a, from our plane of perspective, it looks like something just, you know, this godsend came out of the blue. Now, of course, like you're saying, that isn't actually what's going on. But with that whole scenario you're painting, I mean, humans love that scenario. They love to ascribe the positive things that happen to them to the acts of God, and the negative things that happens to the other guy to the acts of God. But when negative things happen to them or positive thing happens to the other guy, you know, that's dumb luck, and you know, and the other guy has something positive, you know, and it, you know, it's like Satan or something, you know, must be, you know, and then of course, then you get all wrapped around the axle. It's like, oh my gosh, and so I've somehow fallen out of favor with God, and now, you know, he's letting Satan at me, you know, and to discipline me or whatever, you know, I mean, you get all these goofball notions, see the result. Okay. Yeah. The whole point they're trying to make is like, just stop, you know, it's not, you know, I mean, in the biggest picture, you know, you have those statements like, but such is not the case. And, but again, I assure you that this is not true. That's the eternity viewpoint. But then he turns around and said, now you're a long ways away from being able to see the truth of those two statements I just made. But I know of that which I speak. Do you trust him to be giving you a valid eternity viewpoint? Now challenge yourself to see if you can move more and more towards that from your initial gross, you know, blah, blah, blah state, like he rattles off. You know, I mean, certainly you can challenge the gross thing. I mean, if you got great big clods of stuff, you know, you might, you know, get a file out and start, you know, I mean, you know, or, you know, maybe you need a wood chipper to start with, you know, or something to grind it into, I mean, start to get a more refined consciousness, something that doesn't think in such coarse, crude, simplistic ways, something that has a little bit more subtlety to it.
The mulchers,
you know, yeah, and just a lot of it is just humility. Recognize that most likely what you're holding in your hand is a sledgehammer. Okay, it's not the fine little pointed tweezers you were thinking, you know, that it was. It's probably a sledgehammer. And if you just go forth, it's like, boy, I am going to just grab a hold of that tiny little thing. And no, you know, you're not holding that fine little tweezers. So go slow. Just go slow. I mean, that's what mostly what, you know, is how you deal with a lot of this. Don't be quite so certain that you're holding the fine little instrument that will save mankind. Go slow. You know, you're probably holding, you know, a giant sledgehammer that's going to just make things worse.
So these things that happen, that we see that happen, that we think that, you know, that's why there's no God, is because he's killing all these people, all these diseases, and all this stuff. And then you think the Most High's rule in the kingdom of men. And,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I've even said myself to Ken once, I said, boy, Most High done something about them not doing a very good job, or look what they're doing. I mean, this is how they're ruling. I mean, it kind of makes you mad sometimes when you see all the things that are happening out there. And
God shouldn't be causing pain and suffering.
Yeah, so, you know,
that's not my God.
Right.
Yeah,
and
so that's exactly right.
But see, no, you're not going to resolve this. Because notice, even if that cataclysm wasn't the personal doings, it's like, yeah, but God allowed it. He could have intervened,
yeah.
And he didn't. You know, that's the next thought you have. It's like, no, wait a minute. Again, he's omnipresent. Intervene? What does the word intervene mean? He's omnipresent. Where do you think he isn't and he needs to intervene?
He's right there.
I mean, everything is happening exactly as it should. Now is a divine dispensation. It's exactly the way it should happen. That's the actual God that we have to challenge ourselves to recognize and love. We need to love that actual God, not the God of our imagination. The God that's omnipresent in that cataclysm. He didn't choose to not intervene. He can't choose to not intervene. I mean, he's omnipresent. He touches every automaton in that cataclysm. Everything is as exactly as it should be. Can you have faith in such a God? Can you trust such a God? Can you live in absolute assurance in the midst of such a God? That's the challenge.
So when somebody's dying from something, or let's say the tsunami, they're drowning or whatever, he's right there drowning with them.
I mean, especially in the last 2,000 years, that adjuster is right there within that drowning person's mind.
And the other thing was that I was reading, it says when a man goes searching for a friend and that very friend is within his own heart.
Right. Just remind yourself, I wish God would have intervened when that person was drowning. Well, how much closer do you think God needed to get? He's literally within that person's mind. There's zero distance. He can't get any closer. He's intervened infinitely already.
The mistake we as humans make is that this life is to be held on to.
God is to be held on to. Stop holding on to mortal life. Hold on to God who is life. Hold on to God, not onto your mortal life, not onto material things. Hold on to God. That's the whole point of this.
Is what causes our suffering. It's not the tsunami or the earthquake. It's how we think about
happiness.
It
is a choice. Choose to be happy. Choose to hold on to God. All right, before it gets too much later, let's finish it up here.
The divine omnipotence is perfectly coordinated with the other attributes of the personality of God. The power of God is ordinarily only limited in its universe spiritual manifestation by three conditions or situations. One, by the nature of God, especially by his infinite love, by truth, beauty, and goodness. Two, by the will of God, by his mercy ministry and fatherly relationship with the personalities of the universe. Three, by the law of God, by the righteousness and justice of the eternal paradise Trinity.
Just one little thing. I mean, that last one, that's the eternity forms, remember? That, by the law of God, by the righteousness and justice of the eternal paradise Trinity, that's invoking again, there are these eternity forms. They just are. And so, the power of God is, is limited by the eternity forms. It functions within those eternity forms as well, just like you, like we do. And I just, because it might be a little confusing, that ordinarily word, that's easy to misunderstand there. When we get down in the last paragraph, you'll see otherwise. That's attached to the ordinarily. There's ordinarily and then there's otherwise. And by ordinarily there, what you mean is the undelegated expression of God. Okay. If you look up the word, you look it up, you'll see that that's there. Or just kind of think in more, general terms. There is the order that is God the Father, and then there's the order that He's delegated. okay, all right, and So the nature and the will and the law. And notice also, see, only in its universe spiritual manifestation. See, again, notice that word spiritual, like you think of that spiritual domain of Havona or the Isle, okay? Where God is engaging it in undelegated fashion, okay? You'll see that's where it's going, Okay, and the reason they put this in here, I mean, it's not only because of, like Jim, you know, said a long time ago, you know, don't lose sight of the love, truth, beauty, and goodness, you know, mercy, ministry, fatherly relationship, etc., you know, in the midst of thinking about the omnipotence. Keep all of that in play just as solidly. But also remember to distinguish between the central universe and out here. Your spiritual consciousness, humans haven't known it, but their spiritual consciousness has long been invoking visions of Havona. You know, and then they look and it's like, it doesn't look like Havona, but I see Havona. What's going on? That's the whole point. You're seeing Havona. You're not, you know, there's a difference out here. And this is very definitive in the central universe. Don't confuse how you can understand God, how you can rationalize. It's easier to rationalize this problem in Havona, you know, in the central universe. The hard part, which they leave unanswered, is out here. Yeah, read that last paragraph.
God is unlimited in power, divine in nature, final in will, infinite in attributes, eternal in wisdom, and absolute in reality. But all these characteristics of the Universal Father are unified in deity and universally expressed in the Paradise Trinity and in the divine sons of the Trinity. Otherwise, outside of Paradise, in the central universe of Havona, everything pertaining to God is limited by the evolutionary presence of the Supreme, conditioned by the eventuating presence of the Ultimate, and coordinated by the three existential absolutes, deity, universal, and unqualified. And God's presence is thus limited because such is the will of God.
Okay, so there's ordinarily, and then there's otherwise. We live in otherwise. Okay? We live in otherwise. And look what they did. You know, so they, you know, number three, about they bring in the Trinity, and then they're saying, okay, so you have all these attributes of God. They all come together in the unity of the Trinity, and then they get expressed from the Trinity as the hierarchical God the Absolute, God the Ultimate, God the Supreme, the hierarchical expressions, you know, all of which have, you know, a foundation within them. Absolute upholder, absolute upholder, finite upholder, coming from the Trinity, the other side of the equation, God the Mother. See, so that's how they end this, is, okay, we've challenged you with the facts of it, and we've tried to remind you how the Father works from the absolute level, but you've got to recognize that that still isn't enough to understand your circumstances, because you're the otherwise. You get this all rationalized about this relationship between the omnipotence and the other aspects of God, and you get this all figured out, but then there's God the Mother. You know, there's God the Supreme, for instance, in our case. I mean, and now it's much more complicated. It's so complicated that you're not even able to begin to wrap your mind around it. So now you're really going to need faith, trust, assurance, true religion, true monogamy, prayer, God consciousness. See, so that's the. See, the sort of the subtext of this, now that we recognize, is that that's what they're leaving you with, is that the Father part is hard enough. Yet when you get into evolutionary, it's even more complicated. And so, because now you don't just need to understand the relationship between, you know, the individuality of the parts and a particular part like you and how that's working. You have to somehow have a relationship to the whole, and through the individuality of the whole, have this faith, trust, and assurance that can deal with the long drawn out process that is evolutionary reality.
Well, trying to get an evolutional understanding is more difficult, is more complex, but it's no longer just blind faith.
Yeah.
there's some, at least a smattering of knowingness there.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly. So, you know, you have to actually bring in material consciousness. You have to bring in a notion of time. So that's what I'm trying to get at, is you're going to need cosmic consciousness to resolve that. You can actually begin to get an understanding of your relationship with the Father with your spiritual consciousness because of his fiat direct engagement and relationship to you as existential deity. So I'm not saying that it's sort of harder and do you appreciate what I'm trying to say? I mean, it's harder in the sense that it's going to take both eyes instead of mostly one eye. You can see, like just saying that this, it's only limited in its universe spiritual manifestation. So you can say, okay, so I can visualize all this and the spirit fills the form and everything. And it's like, okay, so, but there's no time there. You know, that's what one of the main things that you're trying to get at is you know, in bringing in experiential deity, you have to be able to really begin to bring in your material consciousness, your sense of time, and how that fits in to the picture. And like I was just suggesting, the more you reflect on that, the more you recognize that in order to resolve an understanding in the finite domain, you need more than the Father. You can't just do it with the God of transcendence. The God of and the stories about the way the God of transcendence, or the three gods of transcendence engaged to Havona and how that all works. You need this God of immanence. You need God the Mother within. Yeah, and just one final thought. The way they left that, and God's presence is thus limited, as it is in the finite, for instance, it's thus limited because such is the will of God. Okay, so reflect on that, as we go into the quiet time here, about, the initiator initiated this evolutionary day. It is his will. So if for no other reason, even if you haven't yet been able to really wrap your mind around God the Mother within and have a more direct appreciation, at least you can appreciate that it's the will of God. God is perfect. It has to be a divine, whatever is going on in here has to reflect his perfect will. It has to be a divine dispensation. Even if I can't yet really get my fingers on it in any direct way yet. So let's reflect on that. Let's take a moment.